from New York City to the world, Tom Sullivan is on now.
Here we are, and welcome to the Big Radio Show. Happy Thursday to you on this 19th day of July, 2018. My name is Tom Sullivan. We are getting ready for next Tuesday, I believe, is the date that Paul Manafort's trial on bank and fraud charges will be winding up in a courtroom. In the meantime, there's a lot of fighting. They are trying to get his trial moved to Roanoke, Virginia, for the simple reason that in Northern Virginia, in Washington, D.C., and across the river in Alexandria, Virginia, that's Fairfax County, and Fairfax County is pretty, it's moved from purple to blue. They vote Democrat in that particular area. It's a heavy Democrat area. It's also a heavy area of people that work for the government in Washington, D.C., and they go home to Alexandria, and that's where this trial, one of two, is supposed to begin next week. Now, the judge in this case, Judge Ellis, is an interesting guy because this is a guy, he's kind of a no-nonsense judge, and he already went after Bob Mueller and the prosecutors from Mueller's office when they first arrested, indicted, and then took into custody Paul Manafort. So along the road, the judge said, look it, you guys are not interested in prosecuting Manafort. He is essentially a pawn. What you want to do is go after him on something that you can find, that you have found, that may violate certain laws, but it's about getting him to break so that he will sing to Bob Mueller and say, yes, yes, it's true. You got me. Why, we've been colluding with the Russians all along, and I have all these Russian friends, and the president and I have worked on all this collusion and everything. That's what they want him to do. So the judge was asked, can we move the trial, change of venue, down to Roanoke, where it's a much less Democrat area? And fact, Paul Manafort's lawyers were saying that, you know, if we go to Roanoke, it looks like we could have 50-50 Republican Democrats on the jury. Well, I mean, wouldn't that be great, Judge? And the judge has come back and said, no. The jury pool in Northern Virginia is you're not going to be able to move this someplace where everybody and their brother hasn't heard about Paul Manafort. So he says it doesn't matter where you move it. And he said, besides that, Paul Manafort is not entitled to a completely ignorant jury, nor one with as many Republicans as Democrats, and that the nationwide coverage of the case makes any change of venue ineffectual. So the judge is basically saying, no, let's do this. He says, I don't care if you move it to Roanoke or Kansas City or Dallas, you're still not going to get away from all the media attention and everything else. So this is, I remind you again, this is not about Paul Manafort's role as the chairman of the campaign to elect Donald Trump. So but they got him on tax fraud, bank fraud, all kinds of things that they are going to try and find him, you know, that's what they're prosecuting him on. But now there's a new little wrinkle that's come up in this filing. This happened yesterday morning, I believe, is that there was a motion filed to compel five unnamed witnesses to testify under immunity from the prosecution. So this is where Robert Mueller has got five people that he wants to testify. He doesn't want us to know who they are, and he is giving them immunity from prosecution. All five have refused to testify so as not to incriminate themselves. If Judge Ellis approves this, what they say cannot be used against them. So these motions are sealed, and the government will not tell us who the witnesses are unless they are called to testify. Then they'll be part of the public record. But one of the prosecutors said the five individuals identified in the motions at issue are third parties who have not been charged in this matter and who have not been identified publicly with the case. The motions would reveal those individuals' involvement, therefore creating the risk of undue harassment. So he's got one trial in Alexandria, Virginia, the other one in the District of Columbia Federal Court. That's scheduled for September. He is accused of hiding his work for a pro-Russian political party in Ukraine, as well as hiding the money that he made from that work. So Monday, they will go over the evidence that will be allowed, but we just got the list of what the evidence is they're going to present. There are 400 pieces of evidence that Mueller's people have collected on Manafort. For example, they have photos of a putting green, photos of a pool house. They have tickets to the New York Yankees. They are going to use these items to try to make the case that Manafort committed tax and bank fraud. Believe what the angle is here. I've seen this before where they say, all right, so you're spending a lot of money on all kinds of luxury items, and yet you do not have the reported income that somebody could afford all these luxury items. List is 436 items. They're going to have photos of his multi-million dollar houses. They're going to have photos of his suits, tax filings, loan documents, summaries of money from foreign sources. They're going to show all those to the jurors that will be on this trial. They say he hid income and offshore accounts from U.S. authorities while earning tens of millions of dollars as a political consultant in Ukraine prior to becoming the campaign manager for Donald Trump in 2016. So, he's 69. This will be the first the high-profile trial will be the first by Mueller. He's had all kinds of people just plead guilty. Yeah, I lied, or whatever it might be. What else have they got? They've got his Mercedes-Benz. They've got art and antiques. They got a variety of things that they're gonna drag out. I think it's pretty clear what they're going to do is just say, how can this man afford all of these things and not have a higher income that was reported to the IRS? Therein trying to prove tax fraud. So Tom Winter, who is an investigative reporter, he says Manafort's lawyers want to change the county because the current county is bowl of too many Democrats.
So they argued two things. One, that there's a tremendous amount of pretrial publicity. Obviously, we seem to talk about this case every yes. single day. And that it also has, there's also a lot of interest in the Washington, D.C., Alexandria area where this trial is going to be held. The second thing that they argued is, look at the voting records from the last election. Most people in this area where the jury is going to be picked from voted Democratic. So they wanted to move this towards Western Virginia to the Roanoke area in, so that they could have a voter base there or a jury base there where the vote is much more 50-50. These things almost never succeed.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We'll see where this goes. Glenn Kirshner, who's a former prosecutor, said giving these witnesses immunity, he says, is pretty common in a trial.
Grants of immunity are pretty common in criminal trials. And let's use one of the more usual scenarios. Let's assume that there is a murder that's committed, and it's committed late at night in a dark alley, and there's only one witness. And that witness was selling crack cocaine at the time he observed the murder. What would happen if that witness were called to testify in the homicide trial? He would be asked, sir, what were you doing at the time you observed the murder? And he would have to truthfully testify, I was selling crack cocaine. So that would incriminate him because the government, the prosecutors, could turn around, use that statement against the witness, and bring a charge of distributing illegal narcotics. That's why prosecutors will secure grants of immunity for witnesses so they can feel comfortable testifying fully and truthfully, even if some of that testimony includes crimes they may have committed. That use immunity guarantees that the statements the witness makes at that trial cannot be used against him.
So, this gets kind of interesting. I got a nice tweet from CB MAGA. Oh, you've changed your name. Bet some of the five are Clinton Podesta buddies. I wouldn't be surprised either, because Tony Podesta ran a big lobbying firm immediately after Manafort was arrested. Tony Podesta had this huge consulting firm in Washington, D.C., and all of a sudden he gave everybody 24 hours notice and shut down the firm. But they would be people that would have to admit, yes, I laundered the money, I hid the money, we ran the money through a laundry machine. Please don't prosecute me, but Paul Manafort did it, and I'll testify to that. I don't know. What do you think of these five immunity offers? 855-295-6600.
Enjoy your discussion. You seem to be very fair. It's appreciated.
I just call them like I see them.
You're with Tom Sullivan.
So they're going into this Robert Mueller. This is his first trial out of all of this business since he's been special prosecutor, and it doesn't have, unless they, I don't know what they can do to drag the Trump campaign into this, but this is about Paul Manafort doing business with the people that he's done business with for decades out of Ukraine and Russia. There, James Carville, remember James Carville, Bill Clinton's big political guy? It's the economy, stupid. Carville, because of the fact that he was instrumental in getting Bill Clinton elected, ran that first campaign. Man, he was gold. He was hired by all kinds of people all around the world. And that's what happens in the world of being a big-time international lobbyist, is that if you get a big win or you have a bunch of wins, there are going to be politicians in other parts of the world that are going to hire you. And Paul Manafort started his lobbying business in 1980, 38 years ago. And he and Roger Stone and one other guy started this lobbying firm. And over the years, they have built their clientele. That a lot of his business, he became known for doing a lot of the lobbying for interest in Russia and Ukraine and that part of the world. So that's all fine. And he, I don't know if he was registered, did not register, registry lapsed. I have no idea. But who are these five people? Because Tony Podesta, the brother of John Podesta, who was Hillary's campaign manager, was very much involved in the same industry, the same business, lobbying for foreign clients. And because of the fact his brother was John Podesta, his firm became one of the big-time lobbying powerhouses in Washington, D.C. The day Manafort was indicted, Tony Podesta shut down his lobbying firm, laid off a lot of people. It was a big firm, and disappeared. I mean, they know where he is, but he just got out of the business overnight. Does anything look suspicious to you? So who are these five people? Is one of them Tony Podesta? And are they going to give him immunity even though he knows where all the bodies are buried in the Hillary campaign? Because remember, there were people in Hillary's campaign that were going to Ukraine to get to lobby to get dirt on Donald Trump. So I know this whole business about opposition research, it's nasty. It's a nasty business. And when you're doing it with people that are overseas, Russians, Ukrainians, you got to be careful you don't violate a law. So who do you think the five people are? Do you think Tony Podesta is one of them that's being offered immunity? Just another immunity case. Just like all of Hillary's staff were given immunity. 855-295-6600. Janet, thanks for waiting. You're on the Tom Sullivan Show. Hi, Janet.
Hi, Tom. Okay, so I have a feeling about Manafort, and as far as Tony Podesta goes, could that very well be. I mean, that just makes perfectly good sense. And maybe some of the other ones might even be Flynn. I don't know. You just don't know until it happens. We can speculate.
Right.
But what I did want to mention, though, when you said about them giving or about the judge saying, hey, you know, you're going after, we know you're going after Trump to Manafort.
Right.
And which is done a lot. But I think the judge was very generous to Manafort. He said, you can stay out. You don't even have to have house arrest. Do whatever you want. You just can't do this, this, and this. And, of course, what does he do? He went and talked to his people, tried to obstruct justice. So they made him stay at home. I'm getting to a point here. I'm sorry. And so then he make him stay at home. What happens? He does it again.
Yep.
So they put him in jail.
Yep.
And so then what happens? He says, I want to move. And the guy goes, you can't move. And then he goes, no, okay, you can move. And then they find out he has this really sweet-looking cell, you know, and now he's got to go to real jail. So he did it to himself.
I think so. I think this business about basically, thumbing his nose at the judge was not a smart idea. I don't know why he was in contact with all these people that he was not supposed to be in contact with. But, well, this is all part of the show for next week, that's for sure. But, Janet, thank you.
Amendment 101. You're listening to Tom Sullivan.
Yes, you are, and thanks for coming by. Happy Thursday to you. We're just getting word out of the White House that a little bit of a surprise. President Trump has asked Vladimir Putin to be invited to Washington, D.C. this fall. Sarah Huckabee Sanders in a tweet said that here is her tweet. She says, in Helsinki, POTUS agreed to ongoing working-level dialogue between the two Security Council staffs. President Trump asked Ambassador John Bolton to invite President Putin to Washington in the fall, and those discussions are already underway. Well, the fall is 2 months away. So, I know. Here we are on the, dog days of summer, and fall seems like a long way. No. So I don't know. But anyway, he's apparently the president asked John Bolton to invite President Putin to Washington. And Bolton is on it. He's on the case. So this is was supposed to be a working level dialogue between the two Security Council staffs. But he also wants to say, hey, Vlad, come on to Washington. That's part of this that I think the president is, he keeps repeating, if you look at his tweets and a lot of the interviews he's given over the last couple of 3 days with all this blowback, he keeps talking about the fact that he thinks he has a good relationship with Putin, or that he wants to develop a good relationship with Putin. And he said the same thing about President Xi. He said the same thing about Kim Jong-un. That is obviously, because he keeps using that same term, that is obviously very high on his laundry list of how you do deals, is you develop a good personal relationship. Now, I have to agree with him to this extent. I've always said people do business with people. You do business with people that you know, that you like, that your friends know and they like. I don't know in international relations whether it's important to have a good personal relationship. You can also do business with people that you are, you know, at loggerheads with. But it is what keeps coming out. And so this is, I think, part of that continuing development that Donald Trump has always used in his business dealings, is he wants to get somebody into a good personal relationship to do whatever he wants, whatever deal they're trying to strike. So the work is on. The summit was what it was. There's still not a lot of detail about all of this. But apparently, he wants to work on fighting terrorism. He wants to work on the issues regarding Syria, security for Israel. And let me see, he's got multiple tweets back to back here. Nuclear proliferation, cyber attacks, trade, Ukraine, Middle East peace, North Korea. He says there are many answers, some easy and some hard, to these problems, but they can all be solved. So that's the news coming out of the president. He just tweeted about what he wants to do 7 hours ago, but now it's confirmed from Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Well, the invitation is confirmed. We haven't heard whether or not Putin is going to be here or not. All right, so who are these five people that are being given immunity? I don't like, I understand from the prosecutor, Glenn Kirshner, that that's what you do. You bring in somebody in the middle of a drug deal and you give them immunity so they will not be prosecuted, so they can testify about the drug deal that they were doing with somebody that you've got in your sights. But, well, let's listen. This is Glenn Kirshner again, former prosecutor, saying why witnesses in Manafort's case would need immunity.
Because Bob Mueller has sought grants of immunity for five witnesses, it may be that the prosecution will only need to put two of those witnesses on. Mm. So the identity of the other three immunized witnesses would never have to be made public. And if I can, let me just talk about how this might play out in Paul Manafort's trial. And against the backdrop that I just explained, Paul Manafort, among other things, is charged with bank fraud. Let's assume that when he was filling out his application for the loan, he fraudulently included information that maybe overstated his assets or understated his debts and liabilities, and the bank manager basically was aware of it, covered it up, and granted the loan anyway. That bank manager could very well have a Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination, so Bob Mueller's team would secure immunity for that bank manager so he or she could testify at Paul Manafort's trial without fear of reprisal.
All right, so this Glenn Kirshner, obviously he knows something, because there is a bank manager. Not a bank manager like the local branch down the street from your house, but we're talking about a top executive, loan executive at a bank that Manafort went to and that he wanted some multi-million dollar loan, and that the loan committee took a look at it and said, we're not interested. This is the buzz coming out of this pretrial. We're not interested in giving Manafort a loan. But it got kicked up to the man in charge of lending for this major bank. And this particular executive wanted to get in good with Paul Manafort, because Manafort was either rumored to be or was already the campaign manager for Donald Trump. And he wanted this bank manager, bank executive, wanted to be part of the Trump campaign. He was all enthused and all excited, and he wanted to be part of the political process. And he says, well, let's give that loan to Paul Manafort, because I want to get in good with him so that he will get me into the campaign. And apparently, as the story goes, this bank executive actually did have some minor role in the Trump campaign, some sort of financial advisor or something like that. I don't know. So, yes, that's where the bank executive could be charged with some federal banking laws. But I don't even like that, because you look at, if you're a bank executive and you want to make a bad loan and it goes bad, hey, your career's on the line. You'll get fired. Your stockholders will get rid of you, whatever. You'll lose money. Not a good thing. That goes against the grain of most people in business. So he made a loan to Paul Manafort because he wanted to. And it goes back to my point about people do business with people. This bank executive wanted to get on the good side of Paul Manafort, and so he made him a loan. What does that... Okay, did he work on the campaign? Yes, but what does that have to do with the campaign? It's a bank manager trying to suck up to Paul Manafort. It's done all the time. Plus, this business about, really? Bloomberg's reporting they're going to have these photos of Paul Manafort's multi-million dollar houses and elegant suits, along with his tax filings, loan documents, will be on display to jurors when he goes on trial. I get showing the tax filings. I get showing financial documents. But really, they're just trying to play envy, the envy card? Look at him. Look at his big house. You don't have a big house like Manafort. How did he afford that? I think it's really pretty cheesy. Go on the documents, Mueller. See if you can get a conviction that way. We'll be right back.
Connect and engage with Tom Sullivan. On air, online, on demand.
So we've got a big guessing game about who are these five people that Bob Mueller wants to grant immunity to. This still it bothers me to no end. I don't want to go back and relitigate all the business about Hillary, because that thing is not going to come back to life, that investigation. Peter Strzok made sure that thing was put to bed. But why did the FBI give all of her top people, Cheryl Mills, all those people, immunity long before the investigation was barely underway? And that, to me, still was wrong from the beginning. It just shows, if not for sure, it certainly smells like they were protecting Hillary and her group so that they would never, ever be charged by granting immunity. You can't ungrant it. So, who are these five people that Mueller wants to give immunity to? And if they're all part of the Clinton campaign, Tony Podesta group, just wrong. So the crime and justice reporter on CNN says that he's asking for the immunity because he doesn't want those five to plead the fifth.
So it's significant because these are five witnesses that they say we have not been made public. It's clear these are people who've been perhaps cooperating with the special counsel in some capacity. But what's important here is that these individuals could probably be charged with crimes. And so they could come into court and say, well, we're not going to testify on behalf of the prosecution because anything we say could be used against that. Against us. So what they're trying to do is prevent these witnesses from coming in and taking the Fifth Amendment. And therefore, if a judge signs off on this immunity deal, then therefore they can't be prosecuted for it. And that's important because it's clear that the Mueller team wants their information, wants them to come in and be able to testify without the fear of being prosecuted.
I will bet you a large lunch at the drive-up window that one of them is Tony Podesta, John Podesta's brother. Because ABC News is reporting that just about a month ago, the Podesta Group filed their closing foreign agent registration. It's 3 months late. Podesta says it was due to a computer error, which I think is a little ironic. And what it does is it lists out the 28 pages foreign agent registration filing. What it shows is that Tony Podesta worked for the countries of Iraq, Moldova, Azerbaijan, and Saudi Arabia. So after 31 years as a lobbyist, Manafort is indicted and Mueller goes after Manafort. And Tony Podesta immediately shuts down his business and fires everybody in his company. I mean, so the special counsel has demanded copies of records and correspondence from Tony Podesta's firm. Federal investigators have interviewed about six former employees of his firm. Many have been hit with huge legal fees that they were expecting Podesta to pay, but now he's shut down, and he's not paying anybody anything. Tony Podesta has not been charged with any crime, and it is unknown why the special counsel has spent so much time interviewing the people that worked for him. But this is, I mean, it's just way too close, because listen to this. In 2012, Paul Manafort and his sidekick, Rick Gates, who also pled guilty to lying, they hired Tony Podesta's lobbying firm to lobby on behalf of some obscure Brussels-based group called the European Center for a Modern Ukraine. Manafort worked for the president of Ukraine at the time. They hired Tony Podesta to work for the European Center for Modern Ukraine and lobby for them. So this all ties back to the same place. And if Tony Podesta gets off, he hasn't been charged with a crime. I'll bet you it's because of the fact that they know they could charge him with a crime because he's mostly doing the same thing that Manafort was doing, lobbying Ukrainian government officials and others in Iraq, Moldova, Azerbaijan, and Saudi Arabia. The difference may be that he reported his income and Manafort did not. But that is not a campaign issue. It's not a lobbying issue. It's an IRS issue. You have to report your income, no matter where you make it in the world. But here's Tony Podesta just now tidying up the final report that was months late, 28 pages long, about all of the foreign clients, 28 pages worth of foreign clients that he worked for. So, I mean, he's into this. He's into the same stuff that Rick Gates and Paul Manafort were doing. The only difference that I can see is Podesta may have reported his income and Manafort did not. But they're also, I believe, going after Manafort for the fact that he failed to register, to disclose that he worked as a foreign agent under the Foreign Agent Registration Act. He's supposed to do that with the Justice Department every 6 months. Manafort's been doing that business for, like I said, 38 years. So Tony Podesta's been doing it for 31 years. And now Tony Podesta's getting around to making the filings that he was supposed to make months ago. Anybody else smell a rat here? And it just, I'm sorry, but it just looked so political when it's John Podesta's brother, who is, I think, one of the five that are going to be asked to come in and testify and be given immunity testifying against Paul Manafort. So the idea of a venue change, Glenn Kirshner, former prosecutor, weighs in on that as well about the fact that it's still open, but it's highly unlikely that the change of venue will be granted.
There's nothing out of the ordinary, first of all, with respect to a motion to change venue, that is, move the location of the trial from Alexandria, Virginia, to another jurisdiction farther outside the Washington, D.C. area. In my nearly 30 years as a prosecutor, I have never once seen a judge grant a change of venue yeah. motion. It just doesn't happen, particularly in a case like this where the publicity is not just nationwide, it's worldwide. And so I don't think that's unusual. I also do think that Judge Ellis will continue to deny motions to continue the trial, and we're going to see this trial kick off on July 25th.
Yep, that's next week. So the plan is they're going to show photos of lots of luxury items that Manafort bought. They're going to work the jealousy card. He's a rich guy, and you're not, so you should find him guilty of a crime. Prosecution rests.